All right, the Shilling Show continues here. It's a Turbo Tuesday edition of the program. David Morata is the president of Morata Wealth Management, online at moradaonmoney.com, and today critiquing AOC's message from the future. David, first of all, welcome back. I think it's been 2 months since you've been here, and we miss you when there's a gap in your appearances, so thank you very much. Okay, so I had to look at this video, this indoctrination, and this mindless portrayal of the future, of this lovely socialist future in America. It's really sickening, but it is important for people to understand what's going on. Let's first of all talk about and set the table here very briefly, looking backward on socialism, which is the backdrop to all of these recent discussions we've had.
Yeah, the looking backward is a socialist utopian science fiction story written by Edward Bellamy and published in 1888. Mm-hmm. And as we've been discovering every month, it has everything in it that is socialism today. There's nothing new. In fact, it was one of the most influential books of its time and really set the stage for all socialist thought since then. And it reached its popularity and zenith right before World War II, so the 1920s and 1930s. In World War II, you got to see what socialist countries actually looked like in terms of Italy and Germany and others. And so it fell out of favor, but it's growing back in favor. And much of the appeal of the story of looking backward, it's about a Bostonian man who falls asleep and awakens 113 years later in the year 2000 to find the United States has become a socialist utopia. And much of the appeal is a persuasive technique that it uses called future pacing. And the idea of future pacing is it's a neuro-linguistic programming and hypnosis technique. It's often used in advertising, and the idea is to try to have people envision the wonderful benefits in the future if you just buy whatever they're selling today. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that sounds a little bit harsh, but it's very, very effective technique. It's especially effective on people who have the big five characteristic of what's called openness to new experience. Mm-hmm. And so if you're an openness to new experience, then you can kind of see this utopian future, and it makes you more easily sold whatever they're trying to sell you in the present.
So I want to go back to this term of socialist utopia. That's an oxymoron if I've ever heard it before. Has it ever existed in the history of mankind?
Yeah, no socialist utopia has ever existed, at least partly because socialism is built on a faulty view of human nature. We did a whole show on that earlier. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult, if not impossible, to persuade people that it works in the present. And so the technique of a socialist utopia is, you know, imagine the idea that there's no wars and that government is run by brilliant people and everything is done properly. And all the benefits are shared, and people are willing to work hard for nothing more than honor, you know. And so it's this idea of, wouldn't that be a great place? And the truth of the matter is, it would be a great place. It's just not human nature, and it's not on Earth.
Yeah, so it's not possible to have that. And of course, there was a very popular song that imagined no heaven, and all of that going back several decades. It's just simply not possible. So if we look at this whole thing, future pacing, it's laying out some vision that people kind of buy into. You mentioned openness to new experience. That is something that people who are, I guess, progressives, I'm not going to say necessarily typical what we used to refer to as liberals, but people on the left today, I want to get a little more why they're susceptible to that and why conservatives are not as much so.
Yeah, there's a large body of evidence that shows that those who opt for the political left and those who opt for the political right actually think differently. Mm-hmm. And one of the primary things is this idea of openness to experience. Progressives are much more open to experience. It's not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. People who are open to experience are often more intelligent. People who are closed to new experiences are often distrustful. They don't like change. They don't trust change. They want to have someone overseeing the change to make sure everything doesn't go awry. They're often afraid, afraid that something is going to go wrong, that we're going to lose the civilization, the traditions of the civilization mm-hmm. that are built on. So there's this difference between openness and not openness between the political left and the political right. And In fact, in the upcoming article, I quote Friedrich Hayek, who the right adores Friedrich Hayek. Mm-hmm. He's a libertarian, but he wrote an article, Why I'm Not a Conservative, in which he basically said, because conservatives can't envision that the markets all by themselves might solve problems without anyone overseeing them, because they're really not open to that idea. They don't have this openness that he thinks is necessary, really, to be a libertarian. Libertarians have that openness, and they end up being brighter than both parties. So, you know, you get sort of this contrast between the left and the right. I think as libertarians, you can see those distinctions a little bit easier because you're this third minority party that no one pays any attention to.
So if we compare and contrast here between the libertarian point of view and the progressive point of view, where are the differences? Because I know there's some overlapping there.
Yeah, I just read something that was very interesting on sort of three different views, and it's the three axes of moral certainty. And for progressives, the axis is the oppressed and the oppressor.
Yes.
And for conservatives, the axis is civilization and barbarians.
Mm-hmm.
And for libertarians, the axis is freedom and coercion. So there's really kind of three different axes, and it's one of the reasons why the three parties end up talking past each other quite a lot, is because one is saying, well, people are oppressed, and so, you know, we need to, you know, do something to hurt the oppressors, and others are saying, look, there are these barbarians at the gate, and we need to defend civilization, and the others are saying, well, we need to give people choice, and you keep trying to coerce them to do stuff. So we keep talking past each other, and the author of sort of that book on the three different methods of thinking in politics has suggested really that we just slow down, and we slow down and we try to build the best case possible, knowing what our opponents are really concerned about. It's really the only way that we could reach some kind of a consensus today.
Mm-hmm.
And his suggestion is just don't retweet, don't comment. Spend at least 2 weeks thinking about the proposition from the other point of view before you do anything. And in his own blog, that's what he does. He schedules his posts to come out 2 weeks in advance, so he can't be commenting on current events in the heat of the moment with only one axis of thinking.
They used to call it take a deep breath, count to 10, bite your tongue, and things like that.
That's right.
Okay, makes sense. David Morata is our guest. 977-1070 is the phone number. We're talking about AOC's message from the future, socialism, not the salvation of America for sure. We'll get into some sound bites and analysis on the other side as the Shilling Show continues with David Morata. Stay with us. Change hits. All right, the Shilling Show continues. David Morata here in the house with us online at moratahonmoney.com, talking about critiquing AOC's message from the future. And so, David, we have audio clips. I don't know if you're ready for the first one here. Would you set it up for us and just let us know what we're going to be listening to?
Yeah. Recently, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, offered her own version of a socialist utopian science fiction film entitled A Message from the Future with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And in it, she asks, what if we actually pulled off a Green New Deal? You know, what would the future look like? For the Green New Deal to become a reality, we must be able to close our eyes and imagine it. And so she sets up really the same picture as looking backward. She's going to show you this grand utopia in order to try to sell you how she thinks you need to get there. But the utopian vision will show you, well, this is how we got there. So there's no question about how we can get there. The utopia is possible, and it's also going to come about with this methodology.
All right, let's listen up.
Ah, the bullet train from New York to D.C. It always brings me back to when I first started making this commute. In 2019, I was a freshman in the most diverse Congress in history. Up to that point, it was a critical time. I'll never forget the children in our community. They were so inspired to see this new class of politicians who reflected them navigating the halls of power. It's often said, you can't be what you can't see. And for the first time, they saw themselves.
It's helpful. Already the video is beginning to suck you into its dream world, you know. And in its dream world, you know, something from the future is given as though it were undeniable, the existence of a bullet train. So, you know, right there, you can see sort of we have a bullet train, and it's possible and it's wonderful. And in the video, she's riding it. And so the entire structure of the story assumes, you know, the fact that this utopia is possible. You know, she's seen as a winner. She's a new class of politician navigating the halls of power, and it provides the social proof of these kids, you know, who are looking up to her, that she's inspired. She's literally in with the cool kids. That's sort of the way the video sets it up. And it really does set it up as sort of the oppressed peoples and the oppressors. It took me literally watching this video about 40 times before I realized why she was talking about this minority and diverse Congress. And again, it's this axis of the oppressed and the oppressors. Mm-hmm. And she views people of minority as the oppressed. And you can see this in a lot of progressive thought. You know, the minute someone says, as a black woman, mm-hmm. you know, whatever she says at that point, you can't argue with, because it's just automatically given as you know, as the gospel of the experience. You know, if I were to say as a white man, nothing I say after that is even considered by liberals, because I'm part of the oppressor class, and therefore nothing I have to say has any merit. And so this is the idea of politics today, that we really need to stop and get out of our axis and realize that there are two other axes that people are worried about.
You know what's so interesting? I was listening to what she said. You can't be what you can't see. So I'm thinking about people who want to be good Christians, and they can't see Jesus, but they have the Bible. So I guess they can never be a Christian because they can't see Jesus. And this other thing about reflecting themselves, you know, like everything's based on color. So if you see something that looks like you, all of a sudden that somehow represents you. I would say personally that somebody like Alan West represents and reflects me far better than, say, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, and you know, as a libertarian, skin color is largely irrelevant. I know that that's not the way the rest of the world views things. Mm-hmm. But when I saw the montage of all of the different, you know, minority women, my first thought was had nothing to do with their skin color or their gender. It was the rest of the video that sort of sucked me in, and we were talking about my axis, mm-hmm. which is the difference between coercion and freedom of choice. So that was the primary thing. But yes, it's very very much part of the liberal view that this is an important piece. A conservative looking at that might say, well, you know, some of these ideas are the barbarians at the gate. And so, mm-hmm. you know, why don't you just, you know, and then there's all kinds of things, you know, why don't you just, you know, if you don't like the freedoms that we have in this country, why don't you go somewhere else? And so that's sort of a conservative knee-jerk reaction. Mm-hmm. And I think this video, though, is setting up this future utopia. But in doing that, it's got all this confirmation bias about this was a beautiful and wonderful moment, and what we were doing had incredible significance because, and then it goes on to sort of lay those out.
So let's go to audio clip number two, because it's going to set up the next section here of conversation. So tell us a little bit about this second clip.
Yeah, and in this section, the video starts to set out what was at stake, mm-hmm. Looking backwards from this idea of future pacing.
All right, here we go.
I think there was something similar with the Green New Deal. We knew that we needed to save the planet and that we had all the technology to do it. But people were scared. They said it was too big, too fast, not practical. I think that's because they just couldn't picture it yet. Anyways, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, so... Right. So I think there's something with the Green New Deal. You know, they knew that they needed to save the planet. So literally, you know, no Earth-centric science fiction story could have greater stakes than saving the planet.
Yes.
This is exactly what's at stake here. We knew we needed to save the planet. You know, who was the we who knew this? Apparently everyone. If you didn't know, then, you know, embarrassment, you know, might lead you to change your mind. If you don't know that, then you might say that that's terrible. You know, the we is also a sort of a form of social proof. You know, mm-hmm. we're going to make America great again. You know, who's the we there? You know, and what does it mean? You know, even that's a form of future pacing. Mm-hmm. We're going to make America great. Looking backward, you know, it will see how it was so easy to do. You know, and did we really suspect it? No, we knew. We knew this. It's not a projected trend. Everything's framed in a certainty. You know, and second, we had all the technology to do that. It's another hallmark of socialist thought that they're technological socialists. They think mm-hmm. that technology is going to solve all of the problems in the world. And the mistake they make is to think that that technology is going to come from concerted government effort. You know, concerted government effort has produced very little technology in this country. You know, capitalism built your iPhone is very difficult for the socialists to respond to. And in truth, she's going to go on to talk about how we save the planet, but a libertarian or a free market capitalist would say, we have no idea how we're going to save the planet. We have no idea, even if you take everything that they say about climate change, we have no idea what's actually going to solve that, but a big piece of it is going to come from the free market. So who knows? It might be that at some point in the future, cold fusion is able to pull carbon from the air. I don't know what that's going to look like. But to project a straight line for the next 100 years with our current technology is pretty certain that that's not going to be true. And that the problem is not going to be what we think it is today. It's going to be something else. And so the idea that you're going to destroy capitalism in order to save the planet somehow is setting up a false dichotomy, because capitalism is the very thing that's going to end up creating solutions.
Indeed it is. And this blind trust of government, like, you know, technology in the hands of government is going to be the savior of us all. But we can see today the abuses, and particularly I know my friends in the Libertarian Party who come to visit us every month have brought this up time and time again, that the government is not your friend. And for them to be the all-knowing possessors of certain technologies really could lead us down a very frightening path.
Yeah. And not only that, and then she throws up these criticisms, supposedly, of her Green New Deal, and none of these criticisms are real criticisms. In fact, these criticisms are all false praise that she puts in the mouths of the people. You know, she says that that they might have said the problem is too big, too fast, not practical, and really it can't be too big, because saving the planet is at stake.
Right. Nothing,
and it can't be too big if they did it. If they did it and you're looking backward on having done it, it's not too big. And if it's saving the planet, it can't be too fast. And if it worked, it can't be impractical. So all of these, when you're in the dream state of looking backward, are false dichotomies. You know, the real criticisms would be, this is not actually a solution. You know, this is the wrong conclusion. Your ideas will make it more difficult to solve the problem. Seizing control of the economy will harm millions of people, and your course of action will ultimately result in you having to use violence or threat of violence against many Americans in order to force these solutions upon the country. So, you know, it's going to destroy the free markets, which are going to be the solution, and it's going to take away freedoms because you're going to have to use violence to implement them.
They never say that part.
No.
All right. David Marotta is our guest for one more segment. We're critiquing, analyzing AOC's message from the future. 977-1070 is the phone number. We'll get to calls on the other side. Stay with us. Well, it really is the perfect song, Sugartown, because everything's free and everything's good and everything's wonderful in the socialist utopia. All right, David Marotta is here with us. Let's go to the phones. We don't have a lot of time left. We say hello to Greg. Hi, Greg.
Hey, David. You're one of the most sensible, level-headed conservatives I've ever met. So, hello?
Yeah, thank you, Greg.
Some music cut in. But anyway, the problem with people like AOC and the progressive left movement is these people are actually, in my opinion, the most racist and bigoted people there are. As a conservative, I don't see color. I just see people with values. You know, they're based on Judeo-Christian principles. They're based on moral, based on character. Whereas they put people in groups and divide us. And, you know, especially if you're a middle-aged or older white male who believes in the Constitution and Bill of Rights, who believes in free market capitalism, they absolutely look at you as somebody horrible. And if you live in a rural area and self-reliant, there's a kid out there on Twitter who said that people who don't believe in big city values and technology are just very ignorant and very stupid and very horrible people. So these people are going to use that in these Alinsky, socialist Mao business, and this is the beginning of the end. And like you said earlier, the only way that they're going to enforce this is at the point of a gun, when they get the power of all the state houses and then the federal government. And then people like us will be the first target, those who speak out against them, who refuse to capitulate. And I'll just get your opinion on that. Thank you.
Yeah, Greg, we did a whole show earlier. You can look it up on the robschillingshow.com. You can look up. We did a whole show last time on self-reliant and how the government does not want to think that you're self-reliant. They don't like self-reliance. They like dependence. And it really is one of the problems of liberals. And I do find it interesting that those who live in big cities who live the least environmentally friendly lives end up being claiming that they're the environmentalists, and people in rural communities who live the most environmentally friendly lives end up being against their ideas. I really do find that dichotomy most ironic. It would be best if all of those people living in the big city just tried to live their own lives as more environmentally friendly, rather than forcing it upon everyone else who is really living a much, much more environmentally friendly life.
Let's go on to the final clip here before we run out of time, David.
Yeah, AOC's solution is to simply buy what she's selling and elect more Democrats so they can pass whatever they want with question. And this is where she gets to the sort of conclusion of her video.
All right, here we go.
The wave began when Democrats took back the House in 2018, and then the Senate and the White House in 2020, and launched the decade of the Green New Deal, a flurry of legislation that kicked off our social and ecological transformation to save the planet. It was the kind of swing-for-the-fence ambition we needed. Finally, we were entertaining solutions on the scale of the crises we faced without leaving anyone behind. That included Medicare for All, the most popular social program in American history. We also introduced the Federal Jobs Guarantee, a public option including dignified living wages for work.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. You might have thought there'd be something about the environment in there, but it really shows that in the video, climate issues are used as a pretext for the socialist agenda. You know, none of this agenda provides anything for a solution for climate issues. And to be fair, the way they get there is, you know, all this climate change stuff is going to be really expensive, and rich people are going to be able to afford it. So we need to put all these safety nets in for people who can't afford it. But they think this is all part of the climate deal. The difficulty with environmentalism today is that environmentalism should not be something which is a partisan issue. It should be something that we all agree on. But the progressives have made it a partisan issue by saying environmentalism means we need to destroy capitalism, and they do that, and they call conservatives, you know, climate deniers. Mm-hmm. I can remember when the progressives used to have much broader claims that very few scientists agreed with. And people said, yeah, that's not what scientists agree with. That's not what the science is saying at all. And finally, they reduce their claims to climate change is happening, and it is at least partly caused by human activity. Mm. And they could get, yeah, so you can get a lot of scientists to agree on that, 97%. But that has nothing to do with destroying capitalism and instituting socialism. Scientists don't agree on that. And, you know, conservatives so used to denying their climate alarmism, which I think is a dangerous thing that's constantly done on the left. You know, now a lot of people will just say, I don't believe any of that climate stuff. And so they say, well, that's stupid because the claim is actually very, very small. Conservatives could just as easily claim something along this line. Prosperity is happening, and it is at least partly the results of free markets. You know, and you would find that on the left, there are many progressives who are free market deniers. They would deny that claim, which I think is a tautology. It's easily provable that free markets are a result or a cause much of the prosperity that we have today, and yet they would deny that. So it's strange to me that you get the accusation of being a climate denier, but they are free market deniers, and there's got to be a common ground between those two, which is, I think, the biggest reason why AOC's entire video is actually doing more harm for the environmentalism by putting a wedge between good outcomes and bad outcomes on both sides, and really putting a wedge between there and pitting capitalism against the environment in a way that I think is causing it much harder to reach a consensus.
So, David Marotta, we got an email here, and then I want to make a comment on this as well and get your response. Michael writes in, he says, do we know what AOC means when she's ready for a revolution? Seems to me it's always the Democrats want a war of violence. And we were talking earlier about the conservative perspective of barbarians at the gate. But it would seem to me that libertarians would share that if they indeed saw that this is something that will lead to violence. There are barbarians at the gate, aren't there?
Yes, and that, you know, that's the libertarian axis is one of freedom versus coercion, and coercion is a form of violence that that libertarians are really concerned about. They think that free choice in the markets and free markets is how you get prosperity. They also think it's how you get liberty, and those liberties are worth defending. Mm-hmm. So on this particular issue, I think libertarians and conservatives do line up that socialism is a terrible idea, and that if we actually get socialism in the halls of power, they will use that power in a way that's violent against its own citizens. Because they think that they know what is correct. They think that they have the moral certainty. Using that moral certainty, I think they will execute laws that end up executing people, really, executing their freedoms and bringing about a terrible sort of coercion and violence to the government.
It certainly seems to be what's coming in our direction. And by the way, David's featured on The Shilling Show online at shillingshow.com. A number of these discussions, we have them up online. The latest one, Socialism Denying Self-Sufficiency, that's the lead story right now, and it's David's take in writing of the program we did last time. And this one will be posted soon. David Morata, thank you so much. It's been a very enlightening hour.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and I hope this discussion allows people to see the different points of view in a way that brings about a greater consensus.
That's a good goal. And by the way, you can visit David online at moradaonmoney.com.